Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Nintendo Everything Refresh, the weekly podcast where we keep you up to date as to everything new and exciting in the world of Nintendo. I'm your host, Nick Serpa, joined today by Nicholas Chaudet.
Hello, everyone.
And we also have a new voice that I'm super excited to have on the show. We've got Tom Chaplin.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I've been brought on. Me and Sam, we run a channel, Turnstile, a video game channel, Turnstile. We've been brought on to help make video content on this YouTube channel. So I am excited to be here and be invited to the podcast.
Yeah, no, we're super excited. It's always nice to have new voices on the channel. Everyone has a different kind of history with Nintendo and different types of games they like. So it's fun to have different folks on here. So welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Just jazzed. Let's get going. GoldenEye, I hear that's like the first, the big news this week.
I think that's fairly big news. Yeah, we've actually got quite a bit to unpack this week. But yeah, let's start off with some Switch Online news. So GoldenEye 007, after it was announced last fall, it is finally out now on the Switch for Switch Online Expansion Pass members. Also on Game Pass for folks who are playing like the Rare Replay and all that. But yeah, overall, I think I wasn't expecting it quite so soon, I will say. Nintendo's really been staggering these releases, and so this totally fell off my radar. But yeah, it's kind of a notable release, mostly because this is the only official way that folks can play online multiplayer with this kind of re-release of GoldenEye.
Mm-hmm. It's one, probably, I mean, this would be like one of the most famous licensed games from the N64 era, right? Pretty much.
Yeah, I'd venture that. I'd say that's probably not a crazy thing to say. I think certainly for a lot of folks, there's a lot of nostalgia kind of fueling the hype behind this game. Because I saw a lot of folks talking on Twitter this week, basically being like, wow, this game has not held up as well as I thought it had.
Yeah, I've seen the wackiest workarounds to try and get the controls to feel the same as they did back in the N64 days. Definitely seems like you gotta put in some effort.
Yeah, by the way, I mean, I don't know when this will go up, but our first video will likely be a guide for all the different ways you can remap the controls for this game. So if you want help, we're going to have stuff for you on this channel.
No, that's great to know, Tom. No, okay, so since you're kind of talking about this, I don't want to ruin your video, but I feel like this is one of the things that's kind of holding back Switch Online is that there's really not a way on a game-by-game basis to remap the controls. Like, you can do it in the Switch at the Switch level, but it's not, you know, it's not as straightforward as I think, at least for me. I ran into that recently when I was playing Sin and Punishment. I was like, gosh, I really wish I could remap, like, I want to move with the control stick.
Does anybody have the N64 reproduction Switch Online controller?
No, I wish
that
I did.
They sold? Because I do, and so, like, luckily, okay. When you have that, like, games just work, right? But the video will cover the optimal, you know, remaps to your Pro Controller and Joy-Cons and whatnot to on a system level, unfortunately. And I think there's some comedy to how, like, annoying it is to do all this and some frustration to be had. It is kind of fitting, though, like, that there's, like, this old-school, like, frustrating mechanic thing, but it's just getting your controller to work correctly. like it's so 90s of them. But if you do have the N64 thing, all 12 of you out there, right? Like it is
if you were able to get one, yeah.
Right, exactly. It's sold out right now. It is interesting too. You said like it's online for the first time, but like only on Switch.
Yeah.
That's weird to me. And I remember like watching the Xbox trailer for this game because they both got like shadow dropped like release date trailers like at the same day a few days ago, and all the Xbox trailer advertised was a local split screen co-op, and I had to like rub my eyes cartoon style like what. And then the Switch trailer is all about online multiplayer. It just seemed like totally backwards,
right? Yeah, different universe. Well, Nintendo's got online covered.
Well, I think the reason for that is actually it's not as obvious. I don't think it really comes down to any sort of exclusivity deal or anything like that. I really think it's as simple as you know, the way that Switch Online as a service works is the whole concept is it's designed to take these games that were designed only originally for local multiplayer and make it so that through the emulation service, you can connect with your friends and play online. And Xbox just doesn't really have something like that where you can like retroactively add it back to games that didn't have the functionality, you know?
The built-in system's already here.
Right. So I think that's really the only reason why the Switch has it and Xbox doesn't.
Yeah, because the Xbox version did other things. Like, they did fix the controls for your Xbox controller. You don't have to do all this stuff, you know? They also, you know, it's up-res, it's full... You know, they actually did some kind of remastering work where it does look like Nintendo just... Yeah, it's emulating the original ROM, and that's kind of it.
Right, right. Yeah.
But I do want to push back on the game being, like, bad now. I think it does a lot. I think it does do a lot of really interesting things that feel very fresh and new and haven't been iterated. Like the difficulty and mission structure design feels like super like ahead of its time. Open world kind of like the harder difficulty enemies aren't just like take more damage, but you have other objectives within the level that you don't have to do to complete the level on an easier difficulty. I feel like that's like barely been tried, and I think that would be really interesting. Maybe that's what they're doing in that new Perfect Dark that probably will never come out.
Yes, the first quadruple A game is what the talking about the new Perfect Dark.
Right.
That just tells me it's gonna be another decade. You know, I don't think the game. I have not played this re-released version yet. Actually, most of my nostalgia for GoldenEye actually comes from the Wii version that came out, which was like kind of supposed to be a reimagining of this game. I freaking love that game, man. I would play that game online, like, all the time with people. It was really, like, my first, like, online shooter that I ever played. And I still feel like... I feel like that game also deserves a re-release at some point, because we haven't really gotten a new, like, modern James Bond game in quite a while that has, I think, lived up to people's expectations. I'm very excited for the new one that's being worked on by... Gosh, I can't remember who's exactly... Oh, it's the Hitman developers. They're working on a James Bond game right now.
Okay. Yeah, I did not know that. That is... Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, like, a totally original story. It's, like, not tying in with any of the movies. And they said it was going to be their next main project after Hitman. So that's why I'm, like... It's going to be a good time for James Bond fans pretty soon.
Yeah. I do want to mention one thing that does concern me about... this NSO version of GoldenEye is because of all the copyright involved. That's already an impressive thing to manage to get on Switch, but it also does mean that if the copyright expires at some point, I don't know if they're going to be able to keep it on there. They might just have to smoothly release it, and because all of the NSO stuff is only accessible if you're online and whatnot, there's no way you can download it to play it later.
Yeah, though I can see where that concern is coming from. Nicholas, I don't think you're going to have to worry about that, because I think whenever they release the next Switch hardware, it's going to be a clean restart for Virtual Console backwards compatibility. We're just going to start over anyways. So.
Right. Well, at least, you know, if that happened, it wouldn't be completely arbitrarily, like, unpreserved, like Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon translation. Yeah. And, you know, like that Nintendo owns all the rights to that, and they still are going to... They let that lapse, too, and disappear, so... If the, I don't know, who does it, MGM? Who, I don't even know who has the rights.
It's probably
if that's out of their control, it's out of their control, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so that is out now. So if you've been playing the GoldenEye 007 re-release on Switch Online or on Xbox, let us know. I'd really like to hear what more people think about it. A little bit more Switch Online adjacent news. Not really big news, I think, for most people, but worth mentioning. If you've been taking advantage of the game trials, you can now play Uno. not for a long time, mind you. These things only usually last for about a week. This one, I think, so it's actually been going on in Europe, but if you want to play here in North America, it will be available until February 6th.
Yeah. So. You could say that we all have Uno. It came installed for free. Or we can all install it for free for about a week.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah, it's
we're gonna get a news story next week of it underperforming from Ubisoft.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I think like 2 weeks ago there was a new patch for the game that apparently broke a lot of things with the Switch version
of Uno.
Yes.
How do you break Uno?
Stuff like installed content in terms of DLC not working correctly. I think something reactions not working. I think the UI got messed up. It's also now mandatory to sign in with a Ubisoft Connect account. Just a whole lot of stuff that messed up the game.
yeah, you gotta love it.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I've, this is...
So don't download it, everybody, listeners. Well, don't.
You can try it for free, but I would think twice. I would give it a try before just going out and buying it.
Isn't like a non-distinct generic version on Clubhouse Games?
Yes.
Oh yeah, it's called like Last Card, I think, right, is what it's called on there. Yeah, that's a great point. Well, and also I don't really understand how this would work, like, because if you're playing on your TV with people, like, can't you just see, if you can see everyone's cards, doesn't that defeat the point?
I think it's mostly for online play as opposed to local.
Good point. Okay, that's why it's an online trial.
Yeah, this is why you need the Wii U. See.
Yeah, this is why people subscribe to Switch Online, I would say, is specifically so they can play Uno with their friends. Yeah. So yeah, if you're down for some Uno, well, you can now get in for a little bit of time without spending any more money. So there you go. This isn't exactly Switch Online related, but feels worth mentioning, because if you don't have Switch Online, you're out of luck. But there's another Splatfest. Yes, tough time. You don't get to participate. Sorry. No, I'm just kidding. No, so there's a new Splatfest announced for Splatoon 3 coming up in February. February 11th is when it starts. And the theme for this bad boy is, what's your favorite chocolate? So I expect people to be up in arms about this one.
I expect an overwhelming majority of milk chocolate.
Well, I was going to say, so I think we should open the conversation. What is the best chocolate here?
Milk chocolate.
Really? You think so?
I mean, I know, technically dark chocolate is healthier, but I prefer milk chocolate by a decent margin.
More of, I just don't like white chocolate, so I would just vote for against them, for them to lose. That's kind of my line. But I'm not plugged into Splatoon 3 like I was the older games, but I remember, like, Splatfest were more like, which idol did you like more? You didn't even care. You know what I mean? Is that kind of how... Is, like, the same person winning every time?
No, actually, it's been kind of varied. We've had two, if you count the demo, like, Splatfest, but otherwise it's been a different idol every time. So first was Shiver, second was Big Man, third was Fry.
Gotcha.
So it actually has been kind of varied in that regard.
I'm more of a dark chocolate guy myself. I didn't really think... When I was a kid, I hated it, but... Man, you get like a dark chocolate with like some raspberries and stuff in there.
The bitter taste of adulthood.
There is there's a line with me in dark chocolate. There's a percentage that if I go above it, I won't eat it. But if it stays below that line, I'll be happy to have it over the others.
There you go.
Well, yeah, I do want to mention something exciting about this. Is that the last Splatfest we got was in early January. This one's happening early February, so that kind of breaks the trend we had for the first three, where they seemed spaced apart by 2 months. Because first was September, then November, then January. Now we're getting one in February, so it seems like they might not be doing bi-monthly ones after all, and we might get them more regularly, like we did with the past games, which would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge selling point for that game, and... I think it's also nice because folks who didn't pick up the game at launch, you know, will still have a good amount of these live events to participate in if they want to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so bizarre that they did them so infrequently for the first few months that their plan is still have them release monthly from now on, but oh well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd imagine, you know, they've been pretty transparent in the past, so they have a lot of other content coming, so if they can keep up this cadence of Splatfest and then we're potentially going to get some type of, you know, I presume some type of expansion, or they've mentioned paid DLC in the past.
Yep.
That's going to probably come in the next year or so. So,
yeah. And we're getting the next season starts in early March, or at least it should. So we're getting a whole load of new content in about a month, too.
Yeah, I'd imagine if there have been some... I mean, there are always rumors of a Nintendo Direct, but if there is a Nintendo Direct happening soon, I'd imagine we might get a little bit more Splatoon 3 news. It feels like... Since the game came out in September.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be... Every February, there's a Direct at this point. There's got to be one. I'm almost convinced, and I won't let anyone tell me otherwise.
Right, but Tom, the more you say it, the less likely it is to happen.
Yeah, every time you say it, Miyamoto works. Pushes it back by another hour.
Miyamoto.
Yep. Yeah, he personally is monitoring every Twitter feed. And
every time you say it, Pikmin 4 gets pushed back by another month.
Mm-hmm. No, I want that.
Oh, well, hey, speaking of games, let's talk about some game announcements that we got this week. A surprising amount. If you weren't paying attention, you might have thought you missed an Indie World presentation or something. But no, it's just been a lot of surprising, cool announcements. So this one came out of left field for a lot of folks. There's a new SteamWorld game in development. And this one is totally different from anything that Thunderful has produced before, or Image and Form. This one is like a city builder, which I would not have had on my bingo card.
Yeah. Well, but see, that's at the same time, like, very unexpected and also completely expected, because they've done something new with SteamWorld games basically every single game, the only exception being SteamWorld Dig 1 and 2. But then you had SteamWorld Quest, you had SteamWorld Heist, you have this, you have the third-person game they put out. They just really like exploring different genres within this one world.
Yeah, yeah, it seems really like the only thing consistent at this point is like the art style and just the overall theme of it. But
say, like, I feel like this is a natural conceptual extension of Dig 1 and 2, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because you still mine, I believe, in this, and you're still going around, but then those resources can be used really meaningfully to build a town. I feel like that's like perfect. Like, to me, that's like, oh, that makes too much sense. Obviously, you have to make a city builder, and that's not easy, but like, I'm excited for that because it feels like there's a lot of synergy with the original concept.
Yeah, it's a natural next step.
Yeah, and I think they've also, I mean, it's hard to tell without actually having it in my hands, but just from what I've seen in previews and all that, you know, it looks like they're trying to make... City builders can sometimes have a reputation for being hard to parse or difficult to learn or just very mechanically dense. And this looks fairly approachable. Like, this seems like this could be a good entry point into the genre. I could see them bringing in a lot of folks who, like, are familiar and enjoy the SteamWorld IP, but who maybe are not super well-versed in this genre. I could see it being, you know, very appealing in that way.
I mean...
Well, another thing... Oh, go ahead.
Nick, I don't know about you, but looking at the theming, I would say this is pretty mechanically dense.
Like, in what way?
Robots.
I don't mean mechanically dense. I know. It doesn't have depth.
Talking about crystal, baby. I don't know. I mean, I think another thing that city builders have a problem with on console is playing with a controller.
Yeah.
And they say in their press release that this has been designed from the ground up, that it'll work well with a controller in hand. So to me, when I want to play a city builder, I don't do it on a Switch because it's a mouse keyboard game, right? Mm-hmm. But if this game has that kind of concept from the outset, maybe it's now more desirable to be on a console.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hope that's the case. Yeah, it is one of those things that's really hard until you've had it in your hands. But yeah, we'll find out soon. I mean, they're saying it's coming sometime later this year. And yeah, I'm interested in it. I'm not a huge SteamWorld fan myself. The whole just kind of like aesthetic never really attracted me personally, but I do like the occasional city builder. So this might be on my radar. Yeah. Well, let's move on. We've got quite a few games to talk about in this section. This one also kind of was a big surprise. I don't think anyone was predicting this would happen soon. Life is Strange 2 is coming to the Switch. Now, we've gotten some other Life is Strange games on the Switch. We got Life is Strange Remastered Collection, which included the first game, and it's kind of spin-off half-sequel game. And then we got Life is Strange True Colors, which was the third game in the franchise. But we never got this one. This one just was left out of that package for some reason. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to see this come over. I freaking love these games. And the second one, I think, is really, really good. Have either of you guys played these games? Familiar No. with them?
I'm a little familiar with the first game. I know very little about the second and third, and I really feel like I didn't hear much of the second when it released. There just wasn't much buzz about it, I feel.
Yeah, the second Life is Strange game, well, technically it was, technically the second Life is Strange game was called Before the Storm, but that was, like I said, more of like a spin-off of the first one.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one, I think I mentioned it last year. It was one of my What Have We Been Playing Lately games. It's really, it's different. It's more like a road trip adventure. So you're basically, this incident happens and you play as this older brother, and your younger brother is involved in this incident with the police, and so they have to go on the run, basically. And their goal is to get back down to Mexico, where their dad has some property that they can live in and, you know, kind of restart their lives from. So the whole game is really just about trying to get there, but you know, all this shit happens, of course, and you have to make some really tough choices. And you know, it's different than other choice-based games in the sense that what you're doing, it doesn't affect you so much as it affects your fictional little brother that you're taking care of. So the choices that you make kind of affect how his personality shapes and develops as he gets older over the course of the game.
Yeah, I was kind of saying, really, the concept of you not being the main character with superpowers, but just being someone in their like inner circle, is not something I feel like I've seen very often, and that alone is kind of like, it's a bit of a hook. It's interesting. I wonder how the game handles that.
Yeah, well, if you're curious, I would definitely recommend it. I was very impressed by the game, and it was surprising that it didn't get a lot of, I don't know. I don't want to say it got negative feedback at the time.
It just didn't get much feedback, or at least it didn't get the same kind of limelight that the first game got.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Tom? Is this something you're looking forward to, or have you already played it?
I have not played this series. Was this announced E3? Like, weren't all three games announced to come to Switch like two E3, like 2 years ago? Or am I remembering correctly?
I think just the first and True Colors were. I don't think this one ever was.
That's really odd. Mm-hmm. That's really odd to just announce two of them. Well, I'm glad they're finishing it, but yeah, I don't really... I'm not very familiar with the series, but this is Square Enix, right? They're publishing it, so...
Yeah.
Not a huge surprise. Square Enix loves the Switch. They do.
Yeah, they're the most prolific, I'd say, of probably most of the publishers out there. So yeah, that one's coming super soon, February 2nd, which is, it may already be out, actually, by the time you're listening to this. So yeah, there you go. Now, here's another port that is coming over. This game is Trek to Yomi, which originally came out mostly on Xbox and Steam. And this one is, if you see a trailer for it, you'll probably recognize it. It's a very stylized, black and white, kind of samurai experience, where it's a side scroller, but it's all kind of done up in this very dramatic, classic samurai film aesthetic. And it's not a super long game, from what I've heard. It's something you can get through pretty quickly. But I think I remember Dennis was playing this one, if I remember correctly. And I remember, if it wasn't him, it was someone I knew. But this game got a lot of really great feedback at the time it came out. I think it was on Game Pass and everything, too.
Yeah, it is on Game Pass. That's how I played it. I didn't beat it, but... yeah, it's got that golden era Japanese cinema, like, look to it. And also the kind of plot, too, the samurai plot. Mm-hmm. It is also, like... I mean, for an indie game, it's a really, like, beautiful, almost taxing game. I'll be interested how the Switch handles Trek to Yomi, because... Even on, you know, on Xbox, it's a really good-looking kind of effect-heavy game, but and it runs really well, and it's all about like quick reflexes and reaction times and samurai gameplay. So yeah, that would be my curiosity.
Yeah, from the launch trailer, it seems like it's been ported over pretty well. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a trailer, so it can be kind of fancied and done up, but it looks like it's running pretty well. At the very least, the visual style is intact, and it seems like that's kind of the most important aspect of the game. So that at least is preserved.
Mm-hmm. When you were playing through this, Tom, do you feel like I don't want to be reductive or anything, but is this a more style over substance game, or would you say that mechanically, you know, there's enough depth here to keep folks who, that's very important to them, keep them satisfied as well?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to compare it, like when I was playing it, I was thinking about Sifu, the PlayStation exclusive kind of cinema inspired, but like Chinese martial arts. And it was a like simpler game than that. But similar in its kind of scale, you know, camera angles are pretty static. The rooms are not huge. Like it's trying to have the cinematic experience. And so a bit linear in how you play it as well. So there's ways that the scope is kind of constrained, and it makes sense because it's not a huge game.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a good fit for the Switch. I mean, this for me personally, just because of the focus on the visuals, I can see myself wanting to play this on the big screen rather than on a handheld, but I love that it's coming over. Give other folks a chance, folks who may have missed it. And yeah, Trek to Yomi, that's coming out January 31st, so also might be out by the time you're listening to this. Gotta love all these basically shadow drop games. Always a nice surprise. All right, this one... gosh, just a lot of surprises this week. So I don't know if are you all familiar with Road 96?
No, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Okay, so this is another road trip adventure game that came out on. This was, I think, also a Game Pass game. Lots of Game Pass games coming over, and it's very much a choice driven adventure game. So, you know, you kind of have to decide as you're trying to basically flee this, you know, this fictional country, and you know, the choices you make and who you decide to partner up with, and you know, oh, do I want to hitchhike with this person or whatever, you know, they all kind of affect the story. So that's kind of the elevator pitch for this game, and I guess it did well enough that they're making a prequel. So Road 96 Mile Zero is a prequel to that game, and interestingly, they're adding in like some rhythm elements, which is kind of strange, because as far as I'm aware, the original game didn't really have any rhythm game elements at all.
Huh.
So it's an interesting shift, but I like the idea of it, like as a concept. I don't know. What are your guys' impressions looking at the trailer for this?
It gives me kind of, I mean, not super strong Life is Strange vibes, but there's something about the visual style and the way it's being presented that gives me that same kind of, like, melancholy teenage adventure, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the rhythm sections.
Inspired.
Yeah, all like the rhythm sections, the skateboarding is all very different, obviously. I wonder how much that impacts the narrative experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, we don't know too much about this one yet, but it is scheduled to come out in April. So not too long of a wait. Once we've gotten out of the busy season a little bit, I could see this one falling onto more people's radars. All right, and then one last game, new game that I want to shout out real quick, mostly because this one, I'm a little bit skeptical that what we're seeing in this trailer is Switch footage, personally.
Yeah.
I would love to be proven wrong. So there's a new game that was announced last week called Strayed Lights. It's a action-adventure game. You know, if you've seen, you know, fast-paced combat action games, you know, you've seen something like this before in terms of mechanics. It's looks very fast-paced, like a hack-and-slash kind of combat system. Looks like it's all about getting into a rhythm and, you know, figuring out enemy weaknesses. If you've played an action RPG, that looks familiar. What's really striking about this game to me is the art style.
Mm-hmm.
It looks incredible. It looks just very well animated and lots of neon colors everywhere. I mean, what's not to love?
Yeah. I love the visual design of this. It's so good. Like, the sort of tribal-esque aspect of the characters, the way they use the lighting and the effects, the different colors that both, like, what your main character changes between, what the enemies have. It all looks so good. It gives me kind of Pathless vibes, which I think, funnily enough, is also coming out on Switch very soon.
Yeah, that one actually just got a release date for February. So, yeah, when I saw the trailer for this, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, it looks kind of like The Pathless, and it also kind of looks a little bit like, I don't know if you remember, but EA published their EA originals, and one of them was Faye. For some reason, it kind of reminded me of that, like the character design.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm always baffled when like these like very impressive games, it seems like it's happening more and more now, but these games are just really striking. They come out of nowhere, you mm-hmm. know? Yeah. And you're like, gosh, how long has this been in development? Who's making it? You know, like where did this come from?
Shout out to Hi-Fi Rush, not Nintendo related, but very much what you're talking about in that regard.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, just dropping like a finished, like amazing action rhythm, whatever game. Like whenever we feel like it, we'll just no marketing, just everyone watch it, and everyone play it.
Yep. Which I do kind of question the logic of doing that, like in the middle of one of the three busiest months of the year. But you know, it's like I think this one might get a little bit overlooked. They haven't announced a release date for it yet, but. I mean, man, like, just with all the Switch ports that we've already talked about coming this week, I mean, it's stuff like this tends to get buried sometimes, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that about wraps it up for new announcements for the week. Obviously, there's a lot of smaller stuff and can't get to everything, but I think that's most of the big stuff. Want to talk quickly about some release dates. Obviously, we just mentioned The Pathless is coming out in February, so that's right around the corner. But we also got a little bit of news out of the Xbox event that happened this week. For those of you who aren't following all that, Xbox had a big kind of showcase event where they talked about some of their upcoming projects and gave some updates. And one of those games was Minecraft Legends, which is Minecraft's take on a real-time strategy game. Still got a lot of the, you know, classic Minecraft elements. You're still building bases. You know, they're really touting co-op and playing with your friends is a big function of this game. But yeah, now we know that this is right around the corner. It's scheduled to come out April 18th on the Switch with full crossplay. So that's exciting.
Yeah. It just made me notice how long it felt like it took Minecraft to start branching out into having a bunch of spin-off sequels. Like, Minecraft has been huge for years and years and years. But it wasn't until, the Telltale story-based game that we started getting Minecraft spin-offs. And even then, we've only gotten Dungeons, I think, and now Legends. So right. That's really an untapped market that they're finally starting to really dig into.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like when Microsoft bought the IP way back when, which it's been a while at this point, I think a lot of people thought like, oh, they must really have a lot of, you know, grand plans with this franchise. But they have been kind of slow to put out new projects.
Right. They haven't even updated Minecraft 4 Series X yet, like to get full ray trace, whatever. They haven't even done something like that yet, and you would think that'd be like the easiest thing to do. Though I will say, out of all the Minecraft spinoffs, this one is definitely the most interesting to me, and I probably will try it. I guess it's hard because Minecraft is like every game in one, to think of like a spinoff that it stays true to like its roots but also like is a good game in its own right. I imagine that's difficult to like get an idea for that feels like it fits.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Well, and that was why I was always a little bit baffled when they did decide to make that Telltale Minecraft game, because I was like, well, Minecraft isn't really known for its storytelling, you know.
Yeah. It's a pretty wild direction taking it in.
Right. But yeah, something like this makes a little bit more sense. I know Louise was really excited about this one when it was first announced. I think, you know, for me personally, the thing I like with Minecraft really is just occasionally popping in to build something, and that's about it. So I don't know if I'll be picking this up personally, but yeah, it'll be an interesting experiment nonetheless.
Yeah, I think that's probably the thing I'm most excited for with this. I don't have too much interest in this game itself, but it makes me look forward to what else they will try in this franchise and how they'll proceed from here.
Yeah, I'd imagine if it does well, you know, I'd imagine they have all kinds of ideas. But it's probably just like, okay, which ones can we actually execute on and have market potential?
Make me a Minecraft JRPG and you might have my interest.
Just play Dragon Quest Builders. Those are fantastic games.
Which, you know, is basically just Minecraft, right?
Yeah, it's a Minecraft JRPG.
Yeah.
So yeah, JRPG Minecraft.
There you go. Yeah. You mean like with like turn-based combat and anime yes. nonsense?
Oh, all of that too. Okay.
Does it need to have a 100-hour campaign?
Yes, and, give me an excessive amount of time to pour into it.
Love it. So yeah, Minecraft Legends is currently scheduled for April. All right, now this next one I'm excited about. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with Fuga Melodies of Steel, but this was a story-driven, I'd say it's kind of a strategy game in a way. It's a story-driven strategy adventure game that takes place in the same franchise, believe it or not, as the Solo to Robo series. Which when I first learned about that, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But
isn't that the one where you had to put up the cartridge to? Okay, no, never mind.
Oh, you? No, I think you're thinking of something else. You're talking about that Game Boy game.
Yeah, the Game Boy Advance game. Light. Wrong thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's related to that. But yeah, anyways, apparently, so the first game, Fuga Melodies of Steel, apparently it's actually like a really like dark emotional thing, like. You have this, like, moving ship filled with animal soldiers, and you have to, like, pick ones to sacrifice to, like, charge up this powerful weapon. It's bonkers.
Yeah, my first thought was Animal Advance Wars, but that doesn't feel accurate.
No, it's not. Apparently, it is a absolutely heartbreaking experience, because you have to, like... You have all these cute little animal soldiers, and they are all friends, and you have to, like... There's like a social sim element to it, right? Like you're talking with them and but you're like the captain of this thing and you're in like this desperate war and you have this massive gun basically on the top of this tank thing. It's called like a soul cannon. And to power it and like move forward to the story, you have to like pick animal friends to like put into it. it's like shocking.
Jesus.
I know. So I don't think people really like realize, okay. So that's all crazy. The game did not sell very well, but regardless, they're making a sequel. And the sequel is coming out in May. And as far as I can tell, it looks like more of the same. It looks like there's a little bit more exploration maybe, but...
New giant animal soul gun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's bonkers. I don't know, Tom, what do you make of this?
I feel like we're just in a tactic... strategy game renaissance right now with the Switch. Like, everyone's been calling this genre dead, but I feel like every game we're talking about is RTS or turn-based strategy. Like, that's... I'm always down for games like that, and I'm glad... It must have done well enough to get a sequel, at least. I'm always good for more of those. But I had not heard of the first one, so... though, I do think the hand-drawn, like, art style, it looks great, but I don't know if I... need to kill animals and sacrifice their souls.
More Cult of the Lamb than Advance Wars.
A little bit, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, that's kind of why I wanted to shout it out, is because it just, I don't feel like a lot of people know about it. And I myself have not played it personally, but just the sheer premise has me interested. And I do kind of want to go back and check out the first one and see if there's, like, enough substance and it's not just, you know, people be like, oh, this is so weird, you know? But, yeah. All right, and one final release date. This was for a game that was previously announced in a Nintendo Direct. So we're getting a remake of Harvest Moon: A Wonderful Life. This time it's called Story of Seasons: A Wonderful Life, to fit in with all that confusion with...
Yeah, how is this legal? How did Natsume sign off on this? Or did they have any right to?
That's a great question, Tom, and I don't know the answer. They may not even know the answer. They may just... I don't know. They just might be making it. Hoping for the best.
Just roll the dice. See what happens.
Yeah, I'm making Legend of Greg, Ocarina of Time. I don't know if that's... Is that fine? Is that legal?
That should be fine. It's
the same subtitle, just... but different... title of the main game.
Yeah. Just don't tell the Nintendo ninjas and you'll be good.
This is the remake of the original, though, right?
It is. Yeah, the original was a GameCube game, if I recall correctly. And I guess it's one of the more loved ones in the series because they're doing a full-on remake of it.
Mm-hmm. Also, can we comment on the trailer they released for it? Because it's a little weird in terms of how you want to market the game, but it is also delightful.
Yeah, so it's like instead of doing just like a traditional game trailer, it's like this whole paper book that it's like a stop. I don't know. What would you call it? I guess they call it papercraft in the trailer.
Yeah, I would call it.
I've never seen something like this before.
It looks like far more effort than they necessarily need to put in for just a release date trailer, but I very much appreciate it.
Yeah, the artwork is beautiful. I'm trying to picture like the boardroom conversation that happened. They're like, all right, we need to put out a new trailer for this game, but we need to put it out like yesterday. Do you guys have an idea? And they're like, oh, well, Jim over there, he made this weird book thing. Can we just film that?
He has an experience with flipbooks. Just
scroll the release date at the end of it and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I love it. I love that. I mean, it does make it, it imbues like a labor of love kind of energy to this game.
Yeah.
It's like if they were just cashing in on an old game, you don't think they would market that way. But maybe because it's working on me. Maybe it's charmed me.
They got you. You're in their clutches.
Yes. Well, I do remember when they announced, by the way, the release date for this game is June 27th. So a little bit later, I think, than some folks thought, but yeah, when they announced this remake, I think a lot of folks were surprised because it just feels kind of random. I mean, especially because we get so many farming, sims.
That direct in particular, I believe it was all in the same direct, had like 10 farming games in it. And I think probably one of the challenges with marketing a farming game is how to make the trailer interesting because they're all farming, you know? And so maybe that's what they're doing here. But yeah, I agree. It feels like it has some, at least it has some retro pedigree to stand on than maybe some of the newer ones.
Yeah. 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 We'll find out. I think people are still, as much as people were joking that with all the farming games in LS Direct, it does seem like there's still a decent appetite for them. So, it feels like it's also just, you know, it wasn't really like we used to get games like farming games, but it really feels like a proper genre now, you know? Feels like there's enough games out there that you can kind of call it its own thing at this point. Yeah. All right. Well, that about wraps up our release dates that we wanted to hit on this week. A couple other quick news stories. Not going to spend too much time on these, but felt worth noting, especially this first one. So we talked a little bit about Sonic Frontiers last year. I played it. I don't know, did either of you guys ever get around to Sonic Frontiers?
Nope. I played the demo they put out on Switch, which, as an aside, it's one of those you have 15 minutes to play through the demo and then it ends, which I don't understand why they're still making those. But anyways, I tried it out through that.
Sam had played a lot of it. I think he beat it because he's like a Sonic guy.
Okay.
And from him, so I'm going to just relay what I remember from our conversation is big fan. Most fun he's had with Sonic in a long time in a way that to me sounded familiar. A lot of people mentioned like Legends Arceus was like, oh, they changed it up and it went open world and actually kind of freshened and made it fun again. You know, it had been a while. Sonic Forces was kind of a disappointment. BDSP was a disappointment. So that's kind of where I felt like this game landed. So
yeah, I really enjoyed the game itself for the most part. I mean, they made some strange choices with mechanics here and there. Like, they had a bunch of random mini games that just were totally just out of place and completely broke the flow of the game. But overall, like as a whole, I really enjoyed the game. The Switch port did not leave me impressed. Needless to say, I don't think that's a controversial opinion. But anyways, so there have been some interviews since that game has come out, and the director of Sonic Frontiers, Mario Kishimoto, who has generally been pretty open talking about the game and what he wants to do with the Sonic franchise moving forward, is saying that, you know, some of the things that they brought into this game, most notably the boost mechanic, they're thinking, you know, that may not stick around for future Sonic games. And it's interesting because what they've said in the past was, you know, we really want Sonic Frontiers to kind of be the start of this new era of Sonic, and you know, we want to make more games like this. Mm-hmm. And the boost mechanic is a pretty big part of Sonic Frontiers. Like, right, yeah. When I was playing, you know, I don't know about Tom, I don't know about your friend Sam, but like, I was always hitting that boost button, you know, like that's what the game's all about. So I have no time picturing in my head what the game would look like without it. But
I mean, it's been a part of 3D Sonic games since what, 06 or Colors? Like, it's been there for a while, and the fact that, like you said, it's also still used prominently in Frontiers kind of makes it odd that that's one of the things they're considering cutting, because it seems like a lot of the game is kind of built around that idea that you can get up to max speed pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. But the more, like, adventure-focused 3D Sonics, I mean, there were some early 3D Sonics that didn't, so...
Yeah, adventure.
Maybe this is a hint. Maybe this is a wink of Sonic Adventure 3. That's what they're just prepping us for that.
It could be, you know. I'm referring back to the story that we had up on Nintendo Everything, and it said that they're talking with Kishimoto about the mechanic, and they're saying that it's something that they experiment with. But they also said, this is a quote from the story, they said, quote, he also brought up wanting to challenge what sort of level designs are possible in Sonic without boost, referencing the Sonic Adventure games. So, there you go.
Maybe referencing Werehog levels from Sonic Unleashed.
Oh no.
I'm sure that's it.
Oh no. Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I don't know, it's just an interesting tidbit. It doesn't really mean anything. I mean, Sonic Frontiers just came out. Like, it's gonna be a while, most likely, until we hear about whatever's next for the franchise.
It's getting a ton of DLC, isn't it?
I wouldn't say a ton of DLC. It got some random, like, costumes and stuff towards the end of the year, last year. I know they're planning on making some more of the characters playable.
Yeah, they laid out a roadmap, I think.
They did, yeah. There's some stuff coming. It's not, like, this crazy big project, though, it seems like.
Live service Sonic Frontiers. Gonna live on for the next 12 years.
Right, right. Yeah, and so, yeah, again, I don't really think it means anything yet, but it's interesting to hear that they're already kind of thinking about where things are going to go next.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to shout out this too, because it's not like super related, but we're talking about behind the scenes talks with developers. We recently did an interview with the developers of the new upcoming SpongeBob game coming out, SpongeBob SquarePants, The Cosmic Shake, which I don't know if you guys are big SpongeBob fans or anything, but it's pretty notable because, you know, SpongeBob is, I mean, obviously it's a massive franchise, but hasn't really gotten a new original 3D platformer in quite a while. And this is like a totally original project for that IP. And so there's a lot of folks who are really excited for it. And so we did a huge interview with the developers of the game, Purple Lamp Studios. And I just want to shout out, because I think it's worth a read if you're a fan of the show, or if you were a fan of the show and you have nostalgia for it and you still enjoy the games. You know, it's, they really go and talking a lot about, you know, how much they love the IP, and, you know, they're bringing back some of these older locations and themes from the show, but they're also bringing in like some totally new stuff. They talked about a new character they're introducing, so I'm really curious to see how this game lands. You know, it's such a strange release. It feels like it's kind of random, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you guys at with this one?
It reminds me of Crash 4, right? Like, the studio gets to remake something, does well, and then gets the keys to make another one. And I'm sure they're Purple Lamp's excited to just do this forever. I mean, it's I believe the remake sold very well. I'm not sure how this game will do, but I'm sure that they'll keep doing SpongeBob as long as it, you know, keeps helping fund their studio, right? It's a great opportunity, one of the biggest IPs to kind of get the reins to it.
Yeah, it seems like they're genuinely putting a lot of care into the product too.
Yeah, I mean, look, I haven't watched SpongeBob since I was a kid, but I still have a lot of love and nostalgia for it, and it certainly seems like they're knowing how to play to those cards for sure. But yeah, the idea of like an original, you know, like game, and that, it's interesting. And I know we have someone from the site who's reviewing it, so I'm definitely interested to see how that will play out. But yeah, that's coming out super soon, and I keep forgetting. It's coming out January 31st, so it should also be out by the time we have our next episode. All right. Well, thanks for bearing with us so far, folks. I know we've been talking about a lot of games in this episode. It's been a surprisingly crazy week. Gosh, I can't even fathom. Like, if we have a Nintendo Direct in the next few weeks, I'm gonna be dead. I won't even know what to talk about.
Announcing 12 more games releasing in February.
Yeah, right? Oh my gosh, that's what it feels like. Well, I do want to, you know, every week we always talk about some of the games that came out this past week, because it's so hard, man. It's so easy to get into the trap of, oh, here's what's coming next. You know, here's what's coming in a month or in 6 months or whatever. And then you keep forgetting that all these games that you had previously talked about, well, some of them are actually out now. And it's so easy to just kind of like gloss over that sometimes, you know?
Right. I'm still catching up on last January, let alone this one.
Hey, lucky you, man. I'm still catching up on like January, like 2013, probably. If I had to, you know?
Yeah, I'm still trying to beat Rayman Legends, you know? I'm still
there. There you go. Wow, did you just... Was that actually a January 2013 game that you just, like, pulled deep into your brain?
No, it is not. That wasn't it supposed to be, and then it got delayed?
It was supposed to be... Wasn't that one supposed to be a Wii U launch exclusive, and then they delayed it three times before putting it on other platforms?
Right.
It was.
And then pushed to August or something.
Yeah, like I can't... That. Yeah. God.
I'm gonna... Look, Tom, I'm Wikipedia-ing this right now, and if you're correct...
Of what?
I'm gonna be
it didn't come
impressed.
Out in January. I know it didn't come out in January. Came out on Switch in January.
You were close. August 2013 was when it finally
came
out.
That's what I... Okay. Yeah, it came out in August. I remember getting it in August of that year, because I was waiting desperately for it.
Yeah, talk about things we need a comeback for. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, you know, Ubisoft, I got a tip. Make great games like Rayman Legends again. You know?
No.
That might help.
That's not live service. You don't want that.
Yeah, if it can't be a battle royale, I don't know if it's gonna work for them. But
well, it's not like their battle royales have been working either.
Well, hey, speaking of Ubisoft, they did put out a totally just random game this week that I didn't even know existed, if I'm being totally honest. So it's a game that they're publishing. It's called Oddballers, and it is a new party game. It's like a dodgeball party game. I feel like they saw when Knockout City came out. I feel like they saw Knockout City and they're like, shoot, we should make a dodgeball game. And now here it is, like 2-3 years later. But yeah, it's a party game where you're throwing dodgeballs at people, and there's the predictable level of absurdity. Trailer shows people getting run over with vehicles and pushed off ledges and stuff. So. You know, just your average family-friendly fun.
Yeah, I don't know about the visual style on this one. It looks a little... It doesn't appeal to me personally, but the gameplay itself looks just wild.
Yeah, it's just like ragdoll hijinks.
Yeah.
Right. But, like, we're talking about Ubisoft, and, like, where is this game coming from, and why... Like, why? I know people love these types of games, but... I mean, shoot, like, with everything that happened the past few weeks with them, where they had to cancel all these projects, saying that the Mario Rabbids game underperformed, you know.
Well, cancel them. They had to focus, you know, all hands on deck for Oddballers.
I guess, man. I really would love just to, like, spend a day at their offices and just, like, walk around and be like,
just be a fly on the wall.
What's going on with you guys? Yeah. Yeah.
Ubisoft's so huge, like, they have 80 companies that can be developing smaller games like this, right? And, like, different divisions of Ubisoft that are kind of developing and publishing. I'm not surprised that they're just random games can just pop out from them at any moment.
Right. Well, but this isn't a game developed by them, as far as I'm aware. I think they're just publishing it, which is also a little bit unusual.
Let me look it up.
Yeah, it's not like they've been publishing a lot of smaller games recently.
Okay, it looks like it's developed in part by Ubisoft India.
Ah, okay.
And then Game Swing, which is the non-Ubisoft developer. So those are your two. And Game Swing made a dodgeball game. in 2015. So I guess that's gotcha. Makes sense then.
Man, I'm telling you, man, Dodgeball's having its comeback. between this and the EA game, and then also, I think last year, I think I mentioned it, I played that Dodgeball Academia game. Like, I don't know what it is, but there's a lot of Dodgeball games right now. And with that, let's talk about other games. So this one is a pretty big release, I would say. If you like Wonder Boy, boy, do I have something for you to get excited about. Tom, how would you like to have 6 versions of the first Wonder Boy game, 4 versions of Wonder Boy and Monster Land, and about 10 other Monster Boy games all in one package?
I'm scared by the concept of having 15 games to play all at once.
Too much wonder.
Yeah, it's... Well, okay, it's really... It's let's see, let me do a quick count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's really, it's 6 games, but all of them have multiple versions. So they're saying in total, there are 21 versions of 6 Wonder Boy games in one package.
So this is like a retro collection. Yeah. Then.
Which, okay. As a side note, is kind of odd because there already was a Wonder Boy collection released on Switch that had like... 4 of the 6 Wonder Boy games and different versions of each of those, but rather than just like update that one or make DLC for that one, they're just releasing a new one with all of the additional content.
Look, if I'm being totally honest, like I had before the Switch came out, I had never even heard of Wonder Boy, okay? And then they just decided we're gonna put a lot of Wonder Boy games on the Switch. Yeah. And now it feels like it's this like super prolific franchise, but that's only because they're just putting out so many re-releases of these games.
Isn't part of it that the pretty early on into the Switch's lifespan, they put out, it was Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap, right? And so I assume that because, you know, early Switch days, there wasn't a whole lot on there, that ended up gaining more notoriety than it might have had if it came later in the life cycle. And it probably got a bit of a resurgence for the franchise as a whole because of it.
Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed it.
I'm one to celebrate preservation packages like this. And if there's 18 different ports of an old game, I think that's good.
Though,
like in Wonder Boy fashion, it's like horribly confusing and impossible to understand.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Tom. It better to have it preserved somehow than not, right? Right. And if folks are putting their heart and soul into making this package, then hey, like more power to them.
Yeah, because everyone was talking about Digital Eclipse's Atari anniversary. And we've gotten those games a million times, but the way it was preserved and the packaging was like partly why it was so well regarded.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's supposed to be a super impressive package. It really, you can tell when a package like that is put together by people who really care about the source material. You know, it ends up having more impact to it. And I think, when you get those really solid packages, in a way, it almost does kind of make the case for, like, I can see why we're not getting everything on Virtual Console like we used to a point. You know, like, if companies would rather put together these, like, really, you know, like, just beautifully done, comprehensive, you know, packages of old games with all these extra behind the scenes stuff and all that, like if that's the trade-off, is not having it on Switch Online or, you know, whatever Virtual Console equivalent comes next, I think I can be okay with that, you know.
Yeah, no, that's reasonable.
Yeah,
no excuse. Nintendo needs to make more games available.
Yeah, no excuse for Nintendo. Yeah, that's, I'm with you there.
Well, they're kind of forced to do these too, in a way, because there is no other place for them like there used to be.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think I'm gonna. There were a couple games I wanted to mention, but I think in the interest of time, I'm not gonna get to all of them. But I do. This one is just weird, so I feel like it's worth mentioning. So. One of the complaints with the Switch when it came out was that it didn't have as many, like, little things you could do on it. Like, you know, you on 3DS and the Wii U, you had all these little things. You had Miiverse, you had...
Where is Nintendo Switch Face Raiders?
Yeah, 100%, Nicholas.
You had an hour log where you could see accurate data of your playtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You can.
It's like one of my biggest pet peeves about the Switch. Arbitrarily vague hour logs.
Right. Well, and you can make Miis that you can use in like a handful of games, so that's exciting. But yeah, other than that, the Switch has always been kind of bare bones feature wise. Well, one company has decided that that needs to change, and so for the currently low price of $2, but normally a questionably high price of $40, they've decided to release...
What a deal. I gotta get that right now. I'm running.
Well, Switch. You kind of do, unless you want to spend $40 on it in a few weeks. But yeah, they're deciding to put out, they're calling it NOS, New Operating System. And it is they're calling it a Switch operating system to turn your favorite console into an amazing and surprisingly small personal computer. I can't. So this thing has like five functions. You've got a calculator. You've got an image gallery, but notably, not like a gallery of your images. It just has some images in it already, as far as I can tell. You've got a notebook. You can type notes. To-do list. All your basic PDA functions from, like, the mid-2000s.
Right.
So,
I mean, I get how this is kind of cute, but at the same time, it just kind of seems like a bad smartphone.
Yeah, I don't think anyone, when people were saying we want more features on the Switch, I don't think anyone's saying, I really need a calculator. That would just make the package complete for me. Yeah, and also $40 is a bit of a tough
spot. Yeah, just one of those, like, hey, we're pricing it at $40, but then putting it 95% off, so some people are going to be like, what a steal, and buy it when they wouldn't have anyways. And then if someone does happen to buy it when it's at $40, then they're just making off like a bandit. So
It's not great, but it is what it is. No. Now there is a game in this pack. They call it just a puzzle. It's a charming puzzle game.
Minesweeper?
I don't know.
God, I hope. I
honestly
copyright. Yeah, you probably can't do that.
Yeah, probably not. What do you make of this, Tom? Is this what you've been waiting for?
I don't make of it. I don't make anything of it.
I've been starting to think, I don't want to call this shovelware because it looks kind of unique, and I think that's kind of a harsh term for most games, but we get so many just random things that come on this way. And I'm like, what is this? And I think I'm weighing whether or not we should have a segment for future episodes called Shovelware of the Week, where we just pick just an absolutely just bonkers game that just randomly popped onto the eShop, because we would have no shortage of games to talk about in that case.
Right. The floodgates are open, and they've been open on the Switch. It's so funny because...
Yeah, we're drowning. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And it's like, I remember like how the marketing of the early year of Switch was like how curated and particular they are about every game that makes it on there. And then it started selling, and it's like, okay, open it. Everyone can come in. You have a game? You have an OS with cats in it?
They realize they're like, shoot, why only take a 30% cut out of some games when we could let in literally all the games and get a 30% cut? And it seems to be working well for Nintendo, so good for them. Although the eShop just nowadays in general, I just feel like it's just a mess to sift through. Like, if you're not actively looking for something or you don't check it every week, you're going to miss so many great games.
Yeah, you're better off using some other site. Like, I think Deco Deals is usually one that a lot of people refer to. But just something else that you can look at to try and find what most people tend to like on the platform. Or what's on sale, or what's gotten good reviews. The actual eShop itself is kind of lacking a lot of that functionality.
But it is a shame, because I'm sure there's a lot of actually good games that are just lost, you know, in the shuffle of all this other stuff too.
Yeah.
Not to say this is, you know, I haven't played this game. Maybe the operating system is really, really good.
Something special.
This is true.
Yeah. The Windows 10 killer.
Yeah, you know, hey, the door is open if someone wants to send us a review copy. Render Games.
What do you review for this? Our
inbox is open. I don't know. No. Yeah, if only there were... Yeah, just to speak about the floodgates being open, if only there were a podcast where a bunch of folks who write for a Nintendo site would talk about, like, some cool games that are coming out on the
system. Impossible. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, that would really be a killer idea. I think someone should get on that. All right, folks. Well, that just about wraps things up for this week's episode. Thank you, everyone, as always, for tuning in so far. But before we go, we're going to end with our classic segment, What Has Everyone Been Playing Lately? Which I think, okay, Tom, since you're new around here, we were mulling this out last week. We were like, we need like an actual catchy name for this segment, not just like, what have we all been playing?
Oh, man.
So I'm putting you on the spot here. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That is a tough one.
All right. Well, that's okay. I this is about what I expected, but I'm open to suggestions.
Look, you know, next time I come on, I'll have a name.
All right. All right. I'm going to hold you to that. All right. Okay. Well, let's start with you, Tom. What are some of the games that you've been playing lately?
I've been playing one game and one game only. Because it's so long, and Fire Emblem Engage, I'm a big Fire Emblem fan. I've played every game Nintendo lets me purchase legally. Because half the series you can't play.
That's true.
But for this game, I was suspicious of all of the stuff about it. Obviously, right?
Okay.
Toothpaste head. You know, and like, you were asleep for 1,000 years. You're an all powerful dragon. Like, that's so like the whole premise.
That's never happened. Yeah.
You know, Fire Emblem, like the main characters used to be just like prince whose dad died and he's mad. Now the last few have been like, are like goddess dragon of, you know, God and like, you know, and so it's a little frustrating of like, of how powerful canonically, because I feel like it does hurt like the story. And yeah, it does hurt the story. I feel like this is like cliche the story of Fire Emblem. So I was concerned. Okay. But when you actually get into the game and you start playing the missions, it's the most classic map design strategy gameplay this series has had since probably Awakening. And that I love. And that's, so it's giving me the core gameplay loop I love about Fire Emblem. And one thing about Three Houses that, you know, for a story that's really good and really ambitious for Nintendo, like, I love the characters and story in that game. Like, it is a game that when you replay it, you have to like, oh yeah, I gotta spend 40 hours in this school. And so it's hard to replay. This game, don't feel bad skipping the story. You can get right to the great gameplay, the like classic maps and all these like fun new mechanics they've added to the, they brought back the weapon triangle. I don't know, I'll explain myself a bit further too. Like, Three Houses is like sandbox Fire Emblem. The maps are all just like open fields because there's so much freedom they give you in character building. And you, any character can be anything they want to be in that game. And so it's more about just kind of experimenting with mechanics. And because of that, there wasn't like no limits to resources, and like the map designs like just an open square, where this game the resources are more limited, your money's more limited, and the map design's more linear and has like specific challenges that you need to take advantage of and overcome. So all that makes me, and also looks really good, like Switch games you never know these days, but this game's stunning.
Yeah.
And all that, I'm kind of obsessed with it, and I'm probably like 40 hours in, and I'm still haven't beat it once yet. And usually when I play Fire Emblem, when you beat it once, that's just the beginning. And you have to go in again on the harder difficulty.
Oh, and I don't really know how people do it. Yeah.
Because the games are fun. Yeah, they're just addicting.
Well, sure. Yeah, I think for me, I feel so starved for time in general, you know, that I'm like, shoot, if I'm able to get through a whole RPG, like, I'm just proud of myself for doing that once. Not to mention multiple playthroughs.
Well, luckily there isn't three like story routes in this one.
You only do like eight playthroughs to complete the game. Fake fan. Wow.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm glad to hear that you're enjoying it. And so I want to ask you, because you were saying that, like, you know, back in Three Houses, you any character could be any class or whatever. But I've heard that you can still kind of do that in Engage as well, that there's a lot of room to kind of build out your characters, totally change their classes and how they play, like, fairly early on in the game.
Yeah, there is, but it isn't as, like, easy. Like, three classes, you just choose a different class, right? This one, you have to... this is where the emblem rings come in. They have to gain proficiency with an emblem ring to get, like, the ability to change a class.
Right.
And so if you have a character and they're not proficient with swords, you can't just change their class to swords like you could in Three Houses. You have to sync them up with an emblem ring sword user like Marth, bond them, get their bond to a high enough level for the character to get a sword proficiency, and then you can rank... You can change them to a sword class if you want. So it is. There's a few more steps of you actually having to play the game and get familiar with the mechanics to kind of do some silly stuff with character building.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. No. I like hearing different opinions on this game because, as I mentioned in the last episode, you know, I think I'm not a Fire Emblem expert by any means, and I think the idea of a game so centered around, hey, we're bringing back all these characters from previous games, can be a little intimidating. Like, as someone who, like, oh, like, I want to jump into this. Like, I'm curious about it. But I don't feel like I have all the required background knowledge to really enjoy it. But you're saying that just because the story is just so completely nonsensical, it doesn't really matter?
Well, for that fear specifically, these characters they bring back, like, have, like, no lines. I mean, the Marth, right, and Sigurd, and, like, you know, Sigurd's never even been in a game in America or in English. It's only Japan with Fire Emblem 4. Like, they're just like you, so you recognize their designs, but like when a character has like the marriage thing, right? You go up in like relationship A C B A support ranks, yes. With this game, you also have bond ranks with the rings, right? And you get a conversation every 5 levels with a bond rank. And they're literally one sentence each character. And so you don't need to know these characters because they're not part of the story, really. They're just kind of... It's kind of like how Fire Emblem characters were in that Shin Megami Tensei crossover.
Yeah, Tokyo Mirage Session, yeah.
Okay.
Fire Emblem in like these old characters are there in like almost a name only. And so it's more like, oh, it's their design, you know, and then they have what they add to the gameplay, I think, is what's more interesting is their abilities they give a character than they add to the story. Because, not much.
Yeah. That has been my impression, just seeing a whole bunch of clips online. Although I will say some people have posted some pretty good lines from different characters that have made me a bit more interested in picking the game up.
In I think it's similar with Three Houses, pretty much every line's voice acted in this game. There's no like grunts that just
make I love that line. So yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
that's one of those things that I love to see. It just adds so much to the experience for me personally, especially when I don't have a lot of pre-existing knowledge of the characters. But yeah, the more I hear about this game, the more I'm thinking I might pick it up pretty soon because, you know, after I played Awakening, I was like, I want a little bit more Fire Emblem, but I kind of needed a break after that. And I like the idea of going into a Fire Emblem game that I don't need to have this huge commitment to the franchise to enjoy. So
yeah, I think in many ways it's more accessible because there's not like a lot of fluff to the experience. It's like you get right to the game.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Well, cool. Well, thanks, Tom. Nicholas, what about you? What have you been digging into lately?
Honestly, not a whole lot. I think the only real major thing I did this week was I ended up completing Snake Pass, which is something I've been slowly working towards for a few weeks now. Because I stopped like halfway through back when the Switch initially launched. So that's done, and I don't want to start anything big right about now, because I don't want to be in the middle of like a big RPG when Octopath 2 and Kirby come out. So I'm mostly thinking about revisiting other games. I think there was there's a Monster Hunter Sunbreak, basically just like a more title update information coming out next week. So I might get back into Monster Hunter in preparation for that. I've also been thinking of getting back into Metroid Dread, specifically doing a Dread mode playthrough. because I'd started that, and that was an interesting experience.
I've done that. I've done, I started that and then gave up, I think, on the Kraid boss. I was like, okay, I did the first boss without getting hit once, but I was getting exhausted by Kraid.
Yeah, it gets, from the little bit that I did of resilience. That, I think I got past the first boss and stopped sometime after that. It gets, it's rough. It is an experience.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for people who are able to, like, dive deep into those hardcore boss rush modes and just be there, like,
it's not so bad until you get to the boss, because then you have to perfect the boss without getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many checkpoints throughout Dread that, like, you can get through it with only one heart, whatever, one hit. But when you get to the boss, it's over.
Yeah, I don't want to imagine what the final boss is like on that.
Oh, man. Nicholas, you say you're going to get back into Monster Hunter, but did you ever really get out of it? Because I feel like we talk about it once a month at least.
Technically, I never actually really played through the content added in the second and third title updates. I kind of just watched it come out and read up some stuff on it, but I didn't get back into the games. I think because I was getting a little bit burnt out on it at that point, and also some other big stuff had come out, like Xenoblade, that I was mostly focusing on. So I kind of just let it pass me by. But with this new title update being announced, and they'll probably come out, I would imagine, within the next 2 weeks, it feels like a good time to try and jump back in and just do a little bit more of the stuff that I had missed out on.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a good way to kind of, like, get into something fresh, but not bring yourself out before big experience.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Yeah. That's pretty much where I'm at this week. I was really excited, actually. I watched the Xbox showcase, and I saw the new game that you mentioned earlier in the show, Hi-Fi Rush, and I was like, this game looks like it's built for me. Like, I have to play this. And I've been playing it every single day since it came out, and it is so freaking good, guys. Like, I cannot... I was blown away. So, I love rhythm games, so I already had just kind of a natural inclination to be interested in this, but it is truly astonishing how every single thing in this game goes to the music. Like, everything from, you'd think it's a given, but it's just, it's so impressive when you see it in action. Everything from your character's footsteps as he's walking to things moving in the background around you in the environment, platforms and stuff, obviously.
All the cutscenes.
Yeah, all the cutscenes. Every single thing in this game is in time with the music. But what's crazy is that, like, you don't have to play it like a rhythm game to enjoy it. If you want to just mash buttons and get through combat and, you know, just not worry about the timing of things, you can totally do it and you can have a great time. But if you are doing stuff to the beat, which the game really encourages, you get all this, like, not just, like, visual feedback on screen, but just... everything starts clicking and pieces start moving together, and it's really just mechanically, it feels amazing to play. I love games where I feel like I can really get into, like, a flow state with the combat and the mechanics. And if that's your jam, I cannot recommend this game enough.
Yeah.
Not to mention that it's just beautiful and just striking.
Mm-hmm.
For a presentation. It's just on Game Pass, so you can just play it. You know, you don't even need to, like, just pick it up. I have it downloaded, and it's, once I'm done with Fire Emblem, which might never happen, I definitely want to play it.
Yeah, it's not a super long game from what I've heard. I feel like I'm almost done, but it's only supposed to be like a 10-hour game or so, which is nice. I think that's kind of what I needed right now.
I think the industry needs more games like this. So
yeah. It's so nice just to have it be, you know, very polished, one-and-done experience. No live service, no microtransactions, just you play it, it's a great experience, it's polished, and then you're done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, I was also just surprised to see that this game was made by Tango Gameworks.
Yeah, right?
Of all studios. I mean, I love it. I love that, you know, the studio who's just always been associated with horror games, you know, has clearly proven that they're capable of doing all kinds of things. And I can see why that would be attractive to a big company like Xbox to have that. But yeah, it's just a very different type of game for Bethesda and Microsoft in general. And I also just think if Tom, if you're feeling a little bit burned out with the writing on Fire Emblem Engage, this game will make you laugh, most likely. If you have a tolerance for like corny puns and, you know, just airheaded characters, but like really fun dynamics between it's got some great writing, I think.
Yeah, I could use a break from the friendship can help us defeat any enemy dialogue that every single story event has in Fire Emblem Engage.
Yeah.
We'll do it together and overcome all odds every time.
How many times do they actually say the word engage in Fire Emblem Engage?
Oh, well, God. It's like Power Rangers. Like, yeah, they like have to say up. It to transform.
Mm-hmm. Ooh,
you know, like, that's the word engage.
Engage!
You know, yeah, I know, right? Like, it is like this key word that like initiates the transformation. So, but they don't like say it like in the story, really.
Have you guys heard that thing where it's like when they say like the name of the game in the game, like that's when the credits should roll. So it's like if they say the word engage and Fire Emblem Engage, that should be the end of the game right there.
Oh, when you boot it up, every time you boot up the game, a new voice actor will say the title.
Isn't that just Fire Emblem Heroes then? Fire Emblem Heroes does the same thing, doesn't it?
Right. Yep.
Oh, do they?
Okay.
There's a mechanic where you pull for rings of just of like it's like gotcha.
Oh, okay.
You pull for rings, and so there is a bit of that. And you get like a portrait of a character from one of the games, and they can boost your character stats or something. So there is a little bit. I mean, luckily they don't charge for anything, but there is a mechanic that they could charge if they wanted to.
Jeez.
Yeah, it looked like there were a lot of potential, like, from what I saw, it seemed like there were a lot of currencies and ways to upgrade characters. I was like, oh, this could have gone south very fast.
Luckily they didn't, you know, capitalize on that like they could have.
Yeah, they were making enough money from Fire Emblem Heroes. They don't need to.
It's a Fire Emblem game every year too. Like last year I spent 100 hours on Three Hopes. Like this is crazy.
I know, and that's why I'm so behind on this franchise. Is I'm just like I feel too far gone at this point. I'm like shit. Like I didn't really like discover this franchise until like the Switch era. Really, like I knew about it before then, but I didn't really get curious about it. And then at that point, I had all these great games that I was like, oh my God, I want to play this. I want to play this. Where do I find the time? And yeah, that's why it's been a slow roll, but we'll get there someday. All right. Well, that just about wraps up our episode for the week. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great having you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And and we're excited to see the video content that you and Sam put out. It's going to be great to have some new voices on the YouTube channel.
Yeah, stay tuned on the channel, you know, subscribe if you haven't.
All right, what should people expect? Are you guys shooting for like video every week, every 2 weeks?
The goal right now is every week. Get a video out every week, something fun and entertaining and hopefully informative about Nintendo and the new games that are coming out. So
awesome. And you mentioned at the start of the show you guys have another channel that you're running at the same time.
Yeah, this is what we were doing, and they, you know, we've been brought on because of that work. Like I wrote a review and a guide to that Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon NES release that you can't buy anymore. Like we have some stuff like that, and if you want a taste of what'll be on here, there's some stuff that you can kind of get a head start and kind of get a vibe for our style.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. And thank you as always to all of our listeners for listening to our podcast. This has been episode 41, and we really appreciate all of you who have been sticking with us from the beginning. As always, if you like the show, please spread the word. We would love to get more and more listeners so we can keep doing giveaways, you know, add some new segments into the show, all kinds of fun stuff. So spread the word. We'd love to hear what you think. And we're on every major streaming platform. So whether you're looking for video version over on YouTube, you can also watch that on Spotify. And we've also got audio versions on pretty much every podcast platform. So if there's one we're missing, let us know and we'll see if we can get it up there somehow. But thanks so much. And we will be back at you next week with everything new and exciting in the world of Nintendo. See you guys later.